The world we live in can be a strange place, and usually even stranger through the eyes of a magician. Join Peter Nardi and Mark Spellman for their laid-back, no-holds-barred chat about the news, life, movies. In fact, who knows what they will talk about. Grab a drink, buckle up, and get ready for Wizards, Whiskey, and Waffle.
Right, welcome to episode 3 of Wizards, Whiskey, and Waffle. And Mark, this is our first one with our new intro and our new name.
Yeah, this is it. So this is episode 3, right?
Yeah, this is episode 3. Where have you
episode
been?
Episode 3. So yes, so episode 3. So we should explain why the change. Actually, it's quite a big change, actually, because we started off with the Inner Mind podcast. And then we had the graphic of the brain with inner mind. So it's all very deep.
Yeah,
deep and mentalism and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And then we realized, to you lovely listeners, we realized that, yes, we do talk about magic and we are magicians and that's our background and still what we do now, obviously, in one way or another. But we also love chatting about lots of different things. Things that sometimes there's some funny anecdotes, things that we're like favorite films, classic lines, best songs. We both have a real background and interest in hip hop. So as an example, Peter Nardi. Peter, did you have a name when you were DJing? Did you have
name? Yes,
go on,
I
what
did.
Was it?
I was DJ Cut One. With a K.
I love it.
I even had a t-shirt with it on.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, so my background is... So Peter is a phenomenal... Even now, I mean, God, he's got a really good setup. And there are some floating around bits of you just having a jam session. So yeah, that is around on Facebook. Maybe we can upload some of that to the page for Wizards Whiskey and Waffle. But so Peter is amazing with a deck. I could never do that; it wasn't my thing. But Peter's brilliant at that. My background was I used to be a body popper and a break dancer. Believe it or not, so
and a beatboxer.
Beatboxing was always just a bit of a giggle. But I used to properly body pop. I was really into body popping, the robot. I used to listen to things like Malcolm McLaren back in the day. Is it Buffalo?
Buffalo Girls.
Thank you. Yeah, Buffalo Girls. And obviously Herbie Hancock, all of that stuff. So we go, I know if we've got any younger people listening right now, it sounds like we're speaking a different language, but these are iconic. So a lot of people, obviously, of this generation know hip-hop to be like Eminem and give me some other names because I'm rubbish.
Well, you've got, I don't know who's about now. Well, Snoop Dogg.
Snoop Dogg, yeah, well, the thing Dre. Is,
hip-hop wasn't hip-hop when we were young. It was electro. So it started as electro. Yeah.
Exactly.
And then
so you
sort of
had,
moved into hip-hop.
Yeah, but it was still the hip-hop movement.
Yeah.
So because hip-hop wasn't just music, it was a whole... So you had the graffiti, you had the music, you had the dance.
Yeah.
You had the dress, you know, the tracksuits and the big fat American laces back in the day. So, so we talk about lots of different things. We talk about classic tunes. I used to be a graffiti artist. And
I can imagine that.
Yeah, I was a graffiti, but a very good one. I did all the, you know, sort of big murals. I never broke the law. I just want to put that out there. So I was at school, and I remember the design department knew that I did this graffiti, and they asked me and a couple of my crew to do this big mural, a graffiti mural in the art department. So I expressed myself through illegal activities in a legal environment. So we've got a crazy background that goes all over the spectrum. We also like similar comedies and things like that. So we often find ourselves talking about so many different things.
That's why
we have changed the title, because, you know, we do like a whiskey, and this is going to be something that we're going to feature, actually, every episode that we record. Just so you know, that we record in the evening, so now it's 8:44 at night. Isabella, my daughter, is in bed. Peter's finished dealing with all the Alakazam empire for the day. And we're going to just sit back, have a little whiskey, have a little chat, and we are wizards, I guess, and we do waffle.
We do waffle a lot. And I will say, we are going to get pulled up about this whiskey malarkey, because when I've said I've liked whiskey before, and they say, oh, what you drink? And I say Jack Daniels. The amount of whiskey drinkers that go at me going, well, that's not whiskey. That's not whiskey. So
yeah,
we are, I actually do not like whiskey. I like Jack Daniels.
So, you don't like whiskey?
No, not really. Not proper single malt stuff.
No, but see, but now, right, okay. So I've got a little story, okay? And this is a really good anecdote for life, right. I think. Right, you tell me at the end of it if it's just nonsense waffle. But I was introduced to whiskey by our good friend Colin Clouse. I used to be a red wine drinker. So I used to love red wine.
I love red wine.
But now I just, whiskey is my thing. Tess has actually got me into gin a little bit as a summer drink.
Yeah,
which is nice. I do like, actually. So I don't mind gin, but really and truly, it's either whiskey or gin, and 80% of the time it's whiskey. And I used to be a Jack Daniels drinker. No, I've got nothing against Jack Daniels at all. Obviously, I don't want to lose any potential sponsorship deals. Sponsorship deals with Jack Daniels. But I drank so much. When you go into most bars or pubs in the UK, the most common American sort of slightly sweeter whiskey, which is what I like, so I like American bourbons. It's normally Jack Daniels, most places. So for the last sort of maybe 6 or 7 years of drinking whiskey, my first few years, it was literally always Jack Daniels. Mm. And it just got to the point where Colin Clouse, our very good mutual friend, a.k.a. Street Magic, we were away somewhere, and he said to me, he goes, why don't you try a Talisker? And I was like, oh, it's a bit bitey. And he said, don't put Coke in it. So I tried this Talisker, and this is one of the things that I'm going to sort of go on to really briefly in a second. I tried this Talisker, and it was a bit bitey, I'll admit. It wasn't my normal easy drinking. Yeah. It was a little bit like, you know, kind of thing. And but then after a little while, I kind of got into it, and I thought, right. And then he started telling me about, oh, this is, you know, a Scotch, so that's different to an American bourbon. So then I started trying American bourbon, and then I realized there were things like Woodford Reserve. There is Maker's Mark, which is what I've got right in front of me. We've got a nice little Maker's Mark, and they're sort of similar. The American bourbons are similar Jack Daniels.
Yeah, see, but that's the thing. This is what I'm saying to you, because I like Woodford Reserve and all of these ones, but they are bourbons. And that's where we get pulled up, because people say, well, you know, it's got to be a Scotch whiskey and it's got to be this. So
But also as well, when we drink it, we put Coke in it. Now,
I'm actually drinking my neat at the moment.
Wow. Okay,
so I'm on honey.
Up a little bit.
I'm on Jack Daniels honey
tonight. Okay. So Jack Daniels honey is like, that's like a, you know, yeah, that's, yeah, okay. So that's mixed with honey.
Yeah.
So but it's not a load of honey with Jack Daniels in it, which is actually very nice, but just very, very sweet. But here's the thing. Here's my thing, right? Angelo Vella, very good friend of ours.
Yeah.
He does not like whiskey at all. Jack Daniels, you just doesn't like it at all. And one Christmas, his wife, very kindly, she bought me an experience. So, you know, you can fly a plane or jump out of a helicopter or aeroplane or whatever, parachute. This one was just, it was a whiskey tasting. And right. It was Scotch whiskey tasting down in London, a place called Old Compton Street. Really kind of Soho, London, really kind of, you know.
Yeah.
And she knew that I wouldn't want to go on my own. So she said to Angelo, I know you don't drink scotch, but do it for Mark. Just go. It's a little whiskey tasting. Just try it. See how you get on. And you'll be company for Mark. He's not going to just travel down to central London on his own and do this. So me and Andrew went down to this place. We went into this. We found this location, and it was like an off license, but a nice one. You know, like all the nice red wines in it.
Yeah.
Walked in, and we sort of were like a bit confused, didn't know where to go. Said, we're here for a whiskey tasting. And they said, see that really thin, narrow door by the side there? And it was just almost, you would have not seen this door. It was brilliant. It wasn't quite as concealed and hidden as, you know, a bookcase door or something like that, but it was this tiny little door on the side of a cupboard. And they said, just go up through it upstairs. And it's a private members club upstairs. Went through this door, the thinnest staircase. I don't know how they got any furniture up this staircase. Went up to the top of it, and you had this private whiskey. You could be a member. People go there and drink all these amazing different scotches. We sat down, and the place was full. So we sat down at our table, and they had I think it was about 8 to 10 glasses. Now, bearing in mind, in each glass, it's a tiny little shot of scotch. None of this was bourbon. This was all scotch. And in front of one glass, they had a couple of cheese and onion crisps. In front of another one, they had a date. In front of another one, do you remember those flying saucers when you were a kid?
Yeah, full of sherbet.
Those flying saucers. Yeah, full of sherbet. Right? I had one of that, and I was thinking, what is this? Another one had a little handful of nuts. Another one, this was the one. This one had mature smoky cheddar cheese, ooh, just in cubes or with cocktail sticks, right? Anyway, so they said, oh, you know, your lecturer or your expert is coming out, and this young, quirky American girl came out. And she said, look, I'm going to teach you how to prepare yourself for scotch, how to take your first sip of scotch, and then how to complement your scotch with all of the different tastes that you have in front of you. Cut a long story short, she taught us how, like the way that, imagine biting into a lemon.
Right.
When you bite into a lemon, the first thing that you experience is your gums, your jaw, everything, and every fiber in your body says, I can't bite into this lemon. But that's the first bite. Take a second bite, a third bite, a fourth bite, and then you've completely acclimatized your jaws and your taste buds to the sharpness of that lemon. Exactly the same thing with scotch.
Right.
So it's like smoking a cigar. It's not something you do all the time. It's like an occasion thing. And that felt really lovely when we did it. And basically, she said, right, here's what you do. So you, just like wine, pick up the glass and you prepare your palate for the taste that's coming. So you take a good sniff in of this scotch and then you take a sip of the scotch. But what you do, it's almost a delicacy. And this is what felt really lovely. And she said, what you do is let it sit. Don't swallow it. Just let it sit in your mouth. And you almost just let it flow around. Just this little sip, just flow around in the mouth, across the tongue and everything else. And then she goes, and then when you're ready, then swallowed. And then Angelo was sitting by the side. Obviously, Angelo's doing this, not liking scotch whatsoever. And he went, oof. He goes, it's still a bit sharp, Mark, I'll be honest. And I went, no. Okay. And then she said, right, now that one, for some of you, would be very, very sharp. And then she said, now do it again. And he goes, and this is where most people stop. They go, no, I don't like scotch. And they just stop at that point. She goes, now take another one. And Angelo did it again, exactly the same thing, took a good sniff in, over the tongue, through the gums, and then swallow. And then Andrea went, oh my God, right, okay, that was totally different. And then she said, now, I mean, basically, we went along this line of glasses and tried all of these little snacks. And all of them worked. And the one with the spaceship, she was so honest, I loved it. She said, I always like to nibble on something when I'm having, it's just like, I've got a good film on, a little scotch with some nibbles. I love it. She goes, that's my sort of thing. Where you might go to the cinema and have popcorn, this is what I do. And she really made it sound quite romantic. And she said, so I'm sitting there, I've got a film, I've got my scotch. And she said, and then I was looking at cupboards, nothing. She goes, all I found was this little jar, you know, those plastic jars with two or three spaceships. Or UFOs, aren't they called? UFOs. For me. In the button. And she went, well, I've got no choice. Took them, went and sat down. And she goes, the sweetness of the sherbet and the scotch was a winner. And then we all did it and went, oh, my God. That really worked. So that's one of, so you should try it that way. And I'll give you a really good example. This is what, with espresso. Colin, again, Colin, right? He kind of said, oh, Mark, why do you mix your espresso? You can put milk in it and stuff like that. Just try your espresso. Like, first thing in the morning, bam, good espresso. So I've got one of those machines, an espresso machine.
Yeah.
And for the first week of doing it, I'd have one of these espressos. And, you know, it was almost like having a shot of alcohol, where I'd sort of go, pow, wow, okay. But now I absolutely love it. Like, I can't put milk in my espresso first thing in the morning. I love it, absolutely love it. So now I've spoken for about 15 minutes about whiskey and coffee. Peter.
Well, the thing is, also, you spoke about whiskey and coffee, but we still haven't told them why we changed the name properly. So I'll quickly explain that in a minute. And those things are called flying saucers.
Not UFOs. Okay. Yeah, not UFOs. Okay. Yeah.
So anyway, we changed the name because we sent the podcast out to a few of our friends that are not magicians and said, I'll have a listen to this. This is our first one. And they sort of said, we really enjoyed it. Just having a listen. It was just great. Time flew. We loved the conversation and everything else. So we discussed it. There are hundreds of magic podcasts out there that are doing reviews, doing interviews with magicians. So we thought that even though this is going to have obviously a magician slant because we are both magicians, we're going to keep it something that anyone can listen to and hopefully anyone can enjoy. And we will be talking about magic, but we won't be exposing any secrets or anything like that. This is just a conversation between two mates, hopefully saying it's going to interest you. And we're going to try and cover everything that's going on in the world, like the lockdown, which we're on still.
Yes, yes, we are. Yes, we are.
So now,
obviously, for Alakazam, what difference has it made to Alakazam? And for the listeners, if anyone's just tuned into this episode first, Alakazam Magic is a magic store in Ashford in Kent, quite a substantial store actually, but lots of magic. So, and Peter is the owner and director and creator of Alakazam. So, how has it affected GP?
Well, for us, we actually shut the doors of the shop. So we shut the doors to the public about a month before the lockdown actually happened. Because obviously there was people talking about it and, you know, everything else. So for the staff and everything else, we thought, well, we'll shut the shop. So me and Harry have always been going in the shop at 9 o'clock since the lockdown. Me and Harry have been going in because obviously we're a big mail order company. So me and Harry go into the shop at 9 o'clock. We work till one where Andy comes and we do a swap over. So Andy takes the afternoon shift. Me and Harry come home and I work from home for the rest of the day. In effect, apart from the fact that customers aren't coming through the door, nothing much seems to have changed because obviously we sell a lot of downloads. The sales of them have gone up because people can, you know, literally buy it, sit at home and watch it straight away. But nothing's really changed that much.
What about the amount of people? Because obviously, for me, I can't perform. So the only way that I can perform is virtually. So I've done about two or three Zoom performances where I've done a sort of presentation and on the screen and that kind of thing. I did one where I had a recorded X piece that they played and then a bit of an interview with me afterwards and stuff. It was a breakup of their conference. And can you imagine their conference is all Zoom all day? And for those that don't know Zoom, it's, you know, a platform where you can have lots of people all at home on screens in one place conversing. So for me, you know, obviously not being able to work, you know, I have to be careful, you know. I mean, we're lucky, you know, Tessa's still able to work kind of. But, you know, so spending, you kind of have to be a bit more careful. You know, I'm not going crazy with things. So have you found that with any of your customers or anything like that?
I think it's always been the same with regards to professional magicians. Don't really buy a huge amount of magic because they're out gigging, they do the same tricks. And I'm the same, you know. I don't, when I was working, even though I've got the magic shop, I wouldn't buy myself stuff. Well, I would, to be fair, but I'm the same as you in the fact that we buy stuff because we love learning it. It's not for the fact that, I'm only going to buy it because I'm only going to buy it because I want to go out and do it. Whereas a lot
100%.
A lot of professionals.
100%. I could buy 100 tricks and I may use a principle from one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not even the trick, but a principle from one.
Yeah. So a lot of our customers are hobbyists or amateur magicians. So we sell stuff for obviously pros and amateurs. And yeah. So a lot of our business on a regular basis is people that do it for a hobby that are mostly still working from home, just a bit more time on their hands now. So they're ordering stuff. So we haven't, touch wood, we haven't seen a big downturn in it. And it hasn't really affected us that much. Because like I said, and even the whole situation of the lockdown, because me and Harry are leaving the house every day at 9 o'clock, it feels like we are actually still doing it. If I was stuck indoors,
and then I should imagine Jenny then obviously gets a bit of time in the house to do what she needs to do, so her world is a bit varied. You guys are coming back later on, so there's movement, isn't it? That's the thing, isn't it? It's movement in the house in terms of people coming and going sometimes makes it feel more normal.
And we've got stuff to talk about as well, you know. I couldn't imagine. Not a, you know, I love my wife Jenny and everything, but if you're in the house 24/7, you are going to run out of things to talk about. At least when we come home, it was what happened at work. Oh, what have you been up to? Whereas I presume a lot of people can't even do that because you know exactly what they've been up to. You know, because they've been in the house.
How's that cheddar cheese sandwich making you did earlier? Very good.
Well, Jenny sort of, you know, she loves the garden and stuff like that. Yeah. So she's been enjoying it. The sun's out, so she's really having a good time, and we're really enjoying, because I'm still having customers call up, so I'm still having conversations with people and everything else.
Same with Tessa, very similar.
Yeah,
very similar in terms of keeping in contact with clients, because obviously for those that don't know, Tessa has a beauty clinic which is a sort of specializes in skin. It's not a I always sort of say there's two different types of beauty clinic. There are and sort of beauty clinic, it sounds, you imagine sort of like pink boudoir where you get your nails done and gossip.
Yeah.
Without being stereotypical. But Tessa's place is very much, you know, like if you have got skin conditions or that kind of thing. Tessa's used to teach as well. So she's got a huge amount of clients that are unable to come into that clinic that are trying to keep up some form of skincare, you know, which is, you know, obviously important. And so Tess has been in that sort of position where I was on Britain's Got Talent. I don't know if you know that, but now I am a homeschooling dad. No, I'm lying. I'm still working to a degree, but I have taken on, I'd say probably about sort of 70% of Isabella's homeschooling, keeping her entertained. And we try to keep a structure in place. Sort of 3 or 4 days a week where we wake up and we do phonics, because she's only 4. So we do phonics, we do sensory play. So, you know, I say she'll make me a sandwich. Sensory play. But yeah, so it's been a massive change for me. But then evening times, Isabella goes to bed at sort of 7:30. I then come into the studio at the back of the house. If you're in my house, you back of the garden, I've got, it's not an office, it's a studio. So I've got office area, but I've got green screens and camera equipment everywhere, because everything for X was filmed in this space that I'm in now talking to you. And then that's where I kind of do my creativity, sort of tends to happen until the early hours of the morning, sort of 1-2 o'clock in the morning. Then I go to bed and next day happens. So, you know, but I do say this, you know, as boring as it might be, I'm privileged. I've got a garden. I've got a wife who is still able to work and she's busy and doing her thing. I've got a daughter who I think keeps me entertained. Yeah. Really, she's entertaining. And there are some people that haven't. My dad, as an example, lives in a tower block. He lives in a place called Edmonton in North London. And he's on the 16th floor of a tower block. And my dad's got breathing difficulties and all this kind of stuff. So for him, it's really difficult. You know, he lives on his own.
And he has to stay in.
And, you know, as soon as the sort of lockdown happened, the first thing that I did was I've got a friend who works, there's a place called Spitalfields Meat Market in central London. Is it East London, Central London?
East London, I think.
East London, isn't it? Yeah, but it's a massive market where you get all the amazing meats. And I just said, look, I need this, 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 and this. And we just got my dad, like, I just filled up his freezer and his fridge and just went, look, call me when you need more food and I'll go out and get it. Because I just didn't want him going out, you know, because he's on the at-risk list.
It's scary times, mate. Scary times.
Very, very surreal. Very surreal. So, yeah, but...
I mean, obviously, this has had an effect on everyone, but especially things like the arts, which we'll get onto as 100%, well. You know,
totally.
Because I can't really see that getting back to normal till after Christmas, if then.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, for those, again, obviously with X and Spelman, you know, I've written a show for X and Spelman, obviously after doing BGT last year, and got my producers who are raring to go. Well, we were all raring to go.
Yeah.
And then it was like, no, put the handbrake on, forget that a second. So it, in a way, I think the way that I've tried to look at this on a psychological level is it's someone pressing a pause button and just be ready for when we hit play. We don't know when that's going to be. We don't know how quickly it's going to be, if it's going to be staggered or whatever it's going to be. But I think if you just focus as best you can, then hopefully that keeps a sense of normality and having a bit of direction within all of this. And I think that's the big thing. So, yeah, I mean, you know, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen, when it's going to happen? It is just such a big question mark. Yeah. And it's for everybody. I mean, people that work in... I mean, the thing that I think about is, like, if you work in a restaurant or a pub, and that's your main sort of source of income, that's what you do, whether you're studying and that sort of helps fund your study, how does that work? Yeah. You know, it is the weirdest thing. Like, how do you social distance in a pub, first of all? And even if they say about wearing masks, and this is one of the things we discussed this in the week briefly, and I said to you, like, you know, obviously in a cinema, you can imagine, right, everyone can sit relatively close to each other, but everyone has to wear masks.
Yeah.
No popcorn eating, unfortunately, and no big vats of Coke. You know, you're going to have to wear a mask. And we could do that. You go, oh, I really want me popcorn, but, you know, whatever. Okay, fair enough. Want to watch the film. But at a pub, the purpose of going to a pub or a restaurant is to eat. And that's the thing that baffles me, because if you can't, how do you drink whilst wearing a mask? Well, you can't. How do you social distance? How does the pub or the restaurant make its revenue to continue? You know, like, you know, a Friday, Saturday night, we have, you know, 30, 40, you know, people in the restaurant at any one time. We have two sittings, and, you know, you do the sums, and that pays your rent, your staff, your chefs and everything. But if you're halving that because people have to sit this social distancing because they can't wear a mask because they've got to eat, how does that work?
Yeah.
How does that work? You know, like, are landlords going to be asked to take a cut in what they can charge? Is it, do you know what I mean? Like,
it's very strange, because we were discussing it yesterday, because even if you go to a restaurant, they set the tables 2 meters apart, 3 meters apart, you still got a waiter coming up to you and going up to the other person.
It's just really weird.
There's a
Greek restaurant that we go to very often. Really lovely, really good food. It's been one of our favorite restaurants for probably about the last 10 years. And if they social distance, where the exit is, you'd have to walk past every table to get out. So how does that even work? Go on a bus.
Yeah.
You know, one of our good friends, Mark, you know, Mark Edwards, he's worked for the train services. He's a project manager on the train lines. And he was saying, if they social distance on trains per carriage, you know, you've got less than half the capacity. So now you imagine rush hour, you know, sort of commuters. How does that work?
Yeah. No,
you know,
it's a really crazy situation.
Yeah, really, but even then getting off the train. So if I get, if I'm on a bus at the on top deck at the back of the bus, and I've got to get off. We're all social distancing, but I've got to walk down the aisle to go down the stairs to get off the bus. I've got to walk past all of you. In that moment, I'm not social distancing.
Yeah.
Very strange.
It is really strange. Now, I will say this. We are already at 30 minutes. So I did say on the end of last week's one that we were going to play a gigging nightmare.
Right, okay. So just explain briefly what a gigging nightmare is for people that have never gigged.
Right. So for all you people that have never gigged, you're not magicians or singers or dancers or whatever, a gigging nightmare is it happens to us all. We go and do a gig and something just doesn't go to plan. So this week, this was a voice message that was sent in by a good friend of both of ours called Wayne Goodman. And Wayne's got, it's a good one, actually. I mean, it weren't too good for him, but it is a...
Wayne Goodman's great. He's a fantastic magician. He's very quick with the comebacks as well. I'm really interested to hear. Just for the listeners, I don't know. I have not heard.
You haven't heard this one.
So I will react to this as you would.
This is one of those things. And like Mark said, Wayne's a great magician. He's a great all-rounder as well. He does a great kids show. He's great with adults. He's comedy. He's very, very good. And this is something that could happen to all of us. Like, it literally could. Because
I can't wait. Come on. Right,
okay. So let's play. I'm going to play our intro first, and then I will go straight onto it. Here we go.
Googie. Nightmares.
Hi, it's Wayne Goodman. I've got sent to you a couple of stories, so you may have heard some before, but this is a very, very quick one. I was working on a ship. This is my most embarrassing story. I was working on a ship, and my act, I had to do a bit in the main act every night, and my set, this one piece, was I had to come out in complete darkness with a spotlight and walk to the centre of the stage, and I think I was doing torn and restored newspaper, so I literally walk out, take out the paper, tear it up, restore it, and then walk off again, all done in pitch black, but apart from a spot, single spot. And so I measured from the curtain to the centre, front centre of the stage, was about 9-10, I think maybe 12 steps. So I thought, if I take, like, I think it might be 12. So I thought, if I take 9 steps, that will put me front of centre, but still away from the edge of the stage. And, so I set up, and that was great. In the meantime, one of the illusion acts that was on before me, because my job was to cover the time while they took one illusion off and put it back on again. So I was front of curtain, and they were doing the stuff behind the curtain. And so the act changed, and they changed the illusion, and they had to move the curtains forward about 5 feet. But no one told me. So I came through the curtain into pitch darkness with this one spotlight, follow spot on me. And I took 5 steps forward and then just completely vanished because I fell off the stage into a small orchestra pit that thankfully was empty. But I literally, from the audience point of view, I literally walked forwards and then just completely vanished. And the spotlight operator, not knowing where I went, did the only thing he could do, which was to expand the spotlight and go all over the stage, which kind of showed the whole audience that I wasn't on the stage anywhere. I wasn't ducking off somewhere else. And it got a thunderous round of applause. It was the best trick of the night. I severely twisted my ankle and broke a rib doing it. And the manager said, we could do that every night. We could put like a mat down there. And I was like, I just wouldn't. The reason it worked is because I fell, because I wasn't expecting it. If I was expecting it, I'd be waiting for it. It just wouldn't look the same. My greatest ever trick was vanishing in completely empty stage in front of an audience, which resulted in me getting cracked ribs. Hope you liked it. Made a laugh. And thank you very much.
I really feel bad laughing at that because...
I was laughing. Do you know what? I have to say, right, I actually think I don't know that's a gigging nightmare. And I'll tell you what I mean.
Right.
Because from the audience's point of, I know he broke a rib, you know, but we and suffer twisted for his our ankle. Yeah. Twisted his ankle. Ah, crybaby. Right. But to the audience, that was incredible. Yeah. Like, they even did a bigger spotlight in like Alcatraz. where it's panning over the whole stage. And this magician is gone. That illusion act must have been really knocked, because that was the cleanest vanish ever. Like, no boxes, nothing.
It reminds me of me, you, and a friend of ours, Russ. We went to Las Vegas. We were at a convention or something, and we went to see this magic show. Now, at the time, the magic show was within the magic community was getting panned big time. Mm-hmm. And we went, and it was one of those things, and it's horrible to say, but you either want it to be brilliant or you want it to be really bad. You don't want it to be mediocre. If it's mediocre, it just felt like a waste of time. But I remember we went in there, and we were all sitting there, and at one point, the magician literally just came onto the stage, spoke for a couple of seconds, and the next thing I know, there's about 50 dancers that have just appeared on stage, like literally came from nowhere. And I remember just looking and clapping, and at this point, I don't know if it was you or Russ, turned around to me and said, "What are you clapping for?" And I said, "These dancers just appeared." And one of you went, "Yeah, but you've just been asleep for 10 minutes. I literally saw the magician come on, fell asleep, and woke up when all the dancers were on the stage and thought, wow, that's flipping amazing. Why is no one else clapping to this?
You see this every day, like the whole stage fills up. The whole theatre is full of audience. Like, when I sat down, this was empty.
It's honestly, but that me sleeping was nothing to do with the show. I just, whenever I go cinema or theatre, I do doze off.
Listen, when Peter goes to Vegas, and we've been a few times to Vegas together, Peter is one of these people that, because I travel quite a lot with performances, I have this theory, and my theory is that the minute you get on the aeroplane, take your phone and set it to the destination where you're going. So, the time.
Yeah.
So, if you're going and it's 8 o'clock in the morning where you're going, set it to 8 o'clock and try to keep within that time zone. So, don't go asleep, basically. You know, maybe have an afternoon siesta at 12 o'clock, depending on where in the world you're going. But that's my theory.
Yeah.
And for the most part, it works. And bearing in mind, I mean, like, I've travelled to recently as X. I was in before the whole coronavirus COVID-19 thing kicked off. I was in China twice. I was in China in September, and then in. I hope it's not me that brought it back. That'd be really, really bad, wouldn't it? But I was in China in September and then early November, and that's a long distance flight.
Yeah.
Got on the airplane. Same thing, Indonesia. Went to Indonesia, was in Japan, got everywhere. I don't know if you can do your sound for, I'm not name dropping a person, but you are more than entitled to do your name dropping. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, because I'm name dropping countries.
Places. Yeah.
Places around the world. So
bigging
you can do
yourself
that.
Up.
Bigging myself up. So, but that's my theory anyway. But Peter is terrible at doing this.
I'm really bad.
So Peter's internal clock, he will just go with what feels right. So we go to Vegas, and I think, right, that's it. It's time for bed. It's 2:30 in the morning. We've had a nice night out. Get into bed, fall asleep. I wake up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, look over to the other bed, not me and Peter sleep in the same bed, but a lot of the time we have a double room in Vegas because it's just fun. Because especially if you're drunk, you just need to roll into the same room. Look over to the other bed, and there's no Peter. And then I'll phone him or text him, and he's down on a table playing poker. And then, lo and behold, during the day, the next day, Peter's really tired, but doesn't know why. So, yeah, Peter's not very good with that kind of thing at all.
Yeah, I am terrible. I literally cannot adjust.
Hence falling asleep in a Las Vegas show, a blockbuster show with just amazing production values and stuff, and being amazed at girl dancers on a stage in the blink of an eye. But that blink was a 10-minute sleep, to point out.
Just a little nap.
It was a long blink. I feel for Wayne, but I do think the audience got a good result, and we've got nightmares that we'll talk about in future episodes where it didn't. I mean, I've got one. Oh, I don't even know if I'm going to tell it. I've got one where it was awful. I mean, the worst. Not even. I'm not talking about the one with the nail in the head. Right. You'll have to listen.
Yeah, you can't say it now because we're already at 40 minutes.
I'm not getting it. And we'll talk about that later. We'll talk about the nail in the head later. All I'll say is nail in the head, lots of agents and blood everywhere. That's all I'm going to say.
So,
and then we'll get onto that one in another episode. And also, we were supposed to talk about X and BGT in this episode, but we haven't done that either.
No. So we'll speak about that in the next episode. But that has brought us to the end, Mark.
Cool. Okay.
So, thank you very much once again for joining us. Well, joining us, it's me and you. So
yeah, it's only us. We might be the only people that ever listen to this.
Yeah. I enjoy it.
I listened
to it in the shower the other day.
In the shower? That's a bit worrying. Were you lathering yourself?
I was cleaning myself. Rubbing all the naughtiness away.
Getting rid of that badness. You know, I actually listened to one the other day. I was waiting for something to render. I'm editing, so you have to wait for these files to render. And I listened to our first episode. And I came to the conclusion that I talk a lot. I need to shut up more.
You'll come to that same conclusion when you listen to this one.
I think I will. I'm so sorry, Peter.
Right.
I do apologise. Anyway, listen, thank you for listening. Peter, you wrap it up. You wrap it up.
Right, guys, thank you so much for listening. Next week, we are going to speak about X on the X Factor. Britain's Got Talent, sorry, what am I doing? I shortened the sound bite.
Hang on a minute, I just want to quickly say something. Do you know how many people say that to me?
What, X Factor?
Do you know why that? Because I think they say X.
Yeah.
And the shows aren't completely dissimilar. You know, there's a competition element, whatever. I can't tell you how many people say that. And I always have the same reply. I say, honestly, I wasn't on The X Factor. You do not want to hear me sing. You really don't. Britain's Got Talent, Peter. Come on, keep up.
Well, it just gave me a chance to press our new little soundbite, which I edited down from our 6-minute long player last
week. That was a crazy one last episode. Yeah, sorry about that. My fault.
Right. So anyway, guys, that's it for this week. We'll hopefully see you next week right here on the Wizards Whiskey and Waffle podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Say goodbye, Mark.
Goodbye, people. We love you lots.
We do love you lots.
Thanks for listening to the Wizards Whiskey and Waffle podcast with Peter Nardi and Mark Spellman. If you've enjoyed this episode, please be sure to rate and subscribe. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.